Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
Mike Florio with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
It's Wednesday, it's 11 o'clock, and that means Mike Florio time at Pro Football Talk on Twitter. He is with us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. Hello, Mike, how are you?
I am doing great, how are you?
We're good. The Tua Tagovailoa situation, the placing of him on injured reserve, we're always conflicted in this regard. We had a conversation last week with Dr. Chris Nowinski, and we're sort of relitigating some of these things about how we watch football and when we care. Somebody said to me, you know, that happens every game. We're talking about Tua because he's Tua. We saw it happen. He goes, but there's a guy in a punt return. There's a guy in a kickoff return that we've never heard of going into that blue tent. And why do we make such a big deal out of that but don't care as much about the other guy?
Well, I think it just kind of happened organically that Tua became the face and the name associated with concussions because of the week 3 2022 back injury that we all knew was a concussion, and it forced the NFL to redefine how it goes about spotting when someone has what they used to call gross motor instability, and they now call ataxia following a head injury. Then 4 nights later, the violent collision with the ground as he was whipsawed to the turf, almost like a rag doll, and he went into the fencing posture and straight to the hospital. And we were kind of on pins and needles watching every time he'd play. Is the next play the one that's going to cause a concussion that will end his career? He made it through all of last year without a concussion, and we forgot about it. But we always knew or should have known he's one play away from another concussion, and now we're back in that spot. So with him, it's different. With everyone else, when there's a concussion, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, this is just the way it plays out. When there's a concussion, it's about getting through the steps and getting cleared to play. We've seen players cleared to play as soon as 6 days after a concussion. That happened with Brock Purdy last year. He had a concussion on a Monday night in Minnesota. By Sunday at home against the Bengals, he was playing. Usually, if a guy misses a game, it's one game. You rarely see a guy get put on injured reserve because of a concussion. With Tua, it's happened twice. So I think with him, it kind of breaks the mold on how we go about reacting to football injury. We talked about this earlier today on PFT Live. We're wired to wait while the injured player is tended to, clap while he leaves the field, whether he walks off, is helped off, or is taken off on a cart or a stretcher. And the game keeps going. I mean, that's why they were going to keep playing the DeMar Hamlin game. And the NFL is so sensitive about that. Oh, how dare you suggest we would have played? That's what you always do. You move on from the player who's injured and you keep playing the game. And what's different here is with Tua, high profile, it's happened multiple times now. And here we are in a spot where if he comes back, he's coming back to a sport where We know concussions are possible, if not inevitable. So the next one is going to happen with him. It's just a question of when.
Mike, you mentioned breaking the mold with this Tua. I'm just curious as to whether or not a new mold can be formed because of what we're seeing and because of how we're reacting and how the media at large, fans, are treating Tua, because he has become kind of this spokesperson for this. But now, can that change the way the NFL goes about its business when dealing with these types of injuries?
Well, it becomes very difficult because the system is premised on players getting injured, players recovering from the injuries, and players returning to play. And the Tua situation turns it all on its head. And I think at some level, look, I don't know how involved the NFL is in any of these communications or discussions, but there are tentacles that go from the league office down to the teams. You know, at some point, I could see the NFL preferring that he not play again this year. And that's kind of my takeaway from him being placed on injured reserve. Okay, he misses four games. Then what? Then what? He comes back and plays and gets another concussion? I almost feel like for him to have the appropriate time and space to make a decision about what's right for him long term, he needs to not play again this year. He needs to remove the urgency of, I got to get back and try to win games and help my team. Let the season play out, let the dust settle, and then make a long-term decision about whether he should play, whether he's cleared to play, and if he is, whether he wants to play. So I don't expect to see him again this year. I don't see a way out of this maze, this combination of medical and PR maze for the NFL, for the Dolphins, and for Tua that gets him back on the field this year.
Hmm.
What if he just says, it's yes or no, it's binary, I'm either cleared or I'm not cleared. The moment I'm cleared, I'm playing. I'm under contract.
Well, that becomes a delicate situation. If he's cleared, and if the league doesn't want him to, what are they going to do? See, I think that and I don't want to be cynical here, but doctor opinions can be influenced by a lot of things. That's why they have independent doctors.
I was going to say, he can go to his own doctor.
Right. And you can have a fight over, he's not cleared. We don't want him to be cleared. We don't want to have him be the focal point of national news coverage. We don't want to turn on CNN and see a Tua Tagovailoa concussion story that's going to cause parents to take their kids out of tackle football. I mean, that's a real concern for the NFL. So we're not going to clear him. Well, I found a doctor who cleared me. I want to play. And there would be union grievances and who knows how it would play out. But there's $162 million at play here. If he's never cleared, he gets his $162 million in injury guarantees. If he's cleared and he retires, he gets none of it. And on one hand, it's premature to think about that. On the other hand, it's not, because I guarantee you, at some level of the Dolphins organization, they are having strategic conversations about the flow chart that applies here. What are the options? How does this play out? What do we want? What's best for the player? What's best for us to say to the world, regardless of what we secretly want? And we learned from the offseason hard knocks that the truth and what the team says the truth is can be two different things. And we've known that. It's just great to see it because it's not strategically sound to speak the truth all the time. So there's a lot going on here. And I suspect the Dolphins are trying to figure out the best way to handle what ultimately is a $162 million question.
Mike, that's what makes this so fascinating from my perspective, is just that you understand what's really going on and understand the conversations, as you just said, with that flow chart with the Dolphins, what has to be going through that organization. Matt, they have to prepare, like, Tua is not going to come back. They have to prepare, what if he does come back? The NFL, I think it behooves the league for him not to play anymore this season because of all the reasons that you just named. That's why I asked the question about the mold. And I think there is a tipping point here, if Tua does come back, that has a lot of forced conversation behind it. And I don't know if we're ready for those conversations. Not us. We're always ready for the conversations. But the league, to deal with the public outcry, the backlash of the media. This feels different than anything we've ever seen before. And I think this is uncharted territory.
Well, and the reality is, we collectively have the attention span of cats fascinated with
ball of string,
thread, right? And look what happened the last time. He has the concussion that they lied to us about week three, back injury, bullcrap. Then he has the real concussion. Then he comes back. Then he has the Christmas Day concussion against the Packers, where his head hit the ground and nobody knew there was an issue until the next day. They're like, something's wrong with Tua. We better check him out. Oh, he's got a concussion. He was done the rest of the year. And the passage of time, the reset on the season, that seven-month window where we go from one football season to the next, hey, okay, Tua comes back, Tua's cleared, Tua's healthy, Tua's good to go. He goes 18 games last year, regular season and postseason, with no hit injuries. All the talk about learning how to fall and bulking up. Well, now he's thinner. And it wasn't about falling. It was about dropping his helmet into DeMar Hamlin. Now he has the concussion. I don't know that we forget it this time. Last time we forgot it. Now, whether he comes back later this year, and we definitely won't forget it if he comes back later this year, but if he comes back next year, it's still going to be a talking point. And it's not going to go away. Maybe it goes away if he gets through an entire season again. But even then, the fact that it came back around in 2024 keeps us from ever forgetting. And I wonder how much they even paid attention to it when they decided to pay him all that money. Because I read the whole contract. The word concussion doesn't show up in there. There's no exception. The only thing that's in there is the ability to buy insurance that will provide the Dolphins up to $49.3 million against the $162 million that they'll lose if he's cleared and never plays again. That's it. There's no exception. There's no waiver. There's no language about concussion issues. And did we all just forget? If we did, shame on us. I don't think we'll forget the next time around.
Mike, does it mean anything that the rookie quarterback class is without a touchdown?
I don't think so, because three of them aren't playing. Three of them are. Jaden Daniels has developed already into one of the best running quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, Bo Nix has been overwhelmed by two great defenses, maybe the two best defenses the Broncos are going to see all year in Seattle and Pittsburgh. And, you know, look, Caleb Williams, still a work in progress. The blocking isn't great. Looks a lot like USC last year, where you got this highly talented player that can't show what he can do because he doesn't have time to do it. There's no running game to draw people up to the line of scrimmage and make it easier to find open receivers. So I don't put a lot of stock into it. It's just 2 weeks. There's a lot of running overall. Passing is down. Field goals. They set the record this weekend with 73 field goals, record for a single weekend. And number three on the all-time field goals in a week list is week one of this year. So it's just kind of a weird start to the season. But we still have 16 weeks of regular season action to go, and we see things change all the time. And I think this is just a reality of limited training camp reps, limited off-season reps. And I feel like more and more, you know, you see limited playing time in the preseason. More and more September is kind of the de facto preseason. The only difference is the games count.
I read what you wrote about the situation in Carolina. And you say, well, which situation in Carolina? The fact that they're the worst team in the league, or it's how the not just the fact of the benching of Bryce Young, but what we're learning retroactively about the drafting, the odd development, quote unquote, and now the benching is David Tepper really doing what you think he's probably doing?
Oh, I think he is. And look, here's the reality. To own an NFL team, I'm reverting back to some of my takes from days gone by.
I see, like, there's some Dan Snyder stuff creeping in here.
To drive a car in every state in the union, you have to pass two tests. To own an NFL team, you have to pass no tests. All you have to do is show up with a bag of cash. If you're the highest bidder, wherever you get the money, boom, you can be an NFL owner.
It's like buying a gun.
You don't have to do a damn thing about football, but you can own a team. And once you own that team, no one can take it away from you unless you do something that activates the Mary Jo White investigative process and they come in and they find something and they force you out, like Dan Snyder, like Jerry Richardson, the guy who involuntarily sold to David Tepper 7 or 8 years ago. So once you have the keys, you can drive the car wherever you want, however you want. And I think that's what we're seeing here. He is meddling. He thinks he knows better than the people he's hired to run the team. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of owners meddle. We don't realize it because they do it artfully. They hide behind the football people. They know how to make their points. And if the football people are smart, they'll do what the boss wants. Tepper has been too involved. He's too impulsive. He's fired coaches of his football team, coaches of his soccer team, coaches or GMs of his football team. I mean, the presidents of this team. The retention rate is low. And I think it's just because he wants it now. He's these highly successful people who have been able to turn straw into gold everywhere they've gone, they come into a business where it ain't that easy. And they think they can fire people and eventually grope and find the right button and it'll all change. And he wanted David Tepper wanted Bryce Young. It's blown up in his face. Now he's fallen out of love with Bryce Young. What happens next? And my point is this. The only way to push back against that unlimited power is for the quarterbacks in next year's draft class to collectively say to David Tepper, if you draft any of us, we're not signing with your team. We'll sit out a year. We'll live off our NIL money. Ooh. And we'll re-enter the draft next year. Whichever one of us you pick, we're not coming to play for you.
How much more realistic
like
is
that?
I'm sorry, Mike. I was just curious how much more realistic is that now than, say, 5, 10 years ago before this NIL thing even existed? I mean, we're hearing about all these college players making so much money, and it seems like they're getting more power with that because they don't have to. It's kind of that simple.
It's like football's version of Halley's Comet. It happens every 21 years. It happened in 83 with John Elway, in 2004 with Eli Manning, and now 2025. Is it going to happen then? The difference now is you've got guys who have earned money. You've got guys who have learned, you know what? The system lets me go where I want, when I want. I want to get into the transfer portal, I will. So whatever the rules are, I come to the NFL, I don't want to play for that team. What are the rules? I have to sit out a year? Fine. I got my money. The only challenge is the PR side of it, because fans and media buy into this baloney that it's an honor and a privilege to be drafted. It is not an honor and a privilege to be drafted by a bad team. It is not an honor and a privilege to be drafted by a team that is going to destroy your career or at least delay it. Ask Geno Smith about an honor and a privilege of being drafted by the Jets. Ask Sam Darnold about the honor and the privilege of being drafted by the Jets. Hell, for all we know, Christian Hackenberg would have worked out somewhere else. Zach Wilson still might work out somewhere else. And Bryce Young, if he goes, you know, people are like, well, you know, the Texans dodged a bullet because they wanted Bryce Young and they ended up having C.J. Stroud fall into their laps. Hey, if the Panthers had taken Stroud and the Texans had gotten Young, there's a chance Young's pretty good and Stroud is benched. Wow. There's so much more beyond the innate skills of the quarterback. Yep. And I try to get people sensitive to that because people get mad. How dare you? It's like you've signed up for the Harry Potter sorting hat.
Wow.
And you have no say in the matter whatsoever, right?
It's a great
Why
reference.
Is it that way?
Hey, Mike, you mentioned C.J. Stroud, and I'm sure you've seen the video and you've heard the sound of C.J. Stroud pulling Caleb Williams over and offering him unsolicited advice. We were debating this, of where Stroud is coming from. I found it to be a little presumptuous, if not performative, on his part. I think it's one thing. What do you think the protocol is for when you can give advice like you're an OG quarterback in that moment after a hard-fought NFL game? If you're the same age as a guy, to go over and treat him like he's your kid, I could understand if Caleb Williams is like, look, I might hear this from Aaron Rodgers. I'm not hearing it from you.
Well, on the other side of it too, look, I think there's a segment of the media and the fan base that wants to find fault with anything and everything Caleb Williams does. So it distorts our view and our reaction to what he does. I try to watch objectively. Yeah, he seems like a guy who just lost a football game and really isn't interested in getting a lecture at midfield about basic, obvious stuff. Keep fighting. I mean, I don't need to hear cliches. I want to go change my clothes and get the hell out of here. So, you know, I think some made too much of it. But you're right. At what point did C.J. Stroud become Tom Brady? He's not there yet. So I think it was just a weird thing all around. I think it's not C.J. Stroud's place to preach to a guy who's just 1 year behind him by way of experience. And from Caleb's perspective, you know, look, you just lost a game. You don't want to hear it. But I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised that the knee-jerk reaction by most was, oh, who does Caleb think he is?
No, that wasn't my reaction at all. My reaction was, and I said,
who does C.J. Stroud think he is? That's exactly what Dan's reaction
was.
We're
the same age, man.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They're a year apart in NFL playing experience, but they're a month apart in actual age. And I think, as we talked about, it had very much the big brother syndrome, a.k.a. you just got sunned on Sunday night football. And I'm not trying to hear that, man. Like,
and the cameras are there, the microphones are there.
And that's the thing. They know the mics are there, and that's why it can come off as performative.
They both know damn well the point he was trying to make.
Mike, thank you, as always. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
That is Mike. You too. Have a good one. That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Before Chicago takes on Indianapolis, tune in Sunday morning from 9 to noon for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Mully Olin Kreutz and Patrick Manley. They get you set for the game immediately following the Cubs postgame show at approximately 4:30. Mully, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. I mentioned that name, Olin Kreutz. He was on Friday talking about his relationship with the Tagovailoa family and what he thinks is going to happen. You heard Florio lay it out, big picture. Well, there's some insider stuff from Olin on The Score that I thought was really worth bringing back because it's very, very strong. You're going to want to hear it next on The Score.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head to head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Trips to the left, the receiver to the right. Tagovailoa drops back to pass, steps up in the pocket. He's going to keep it. He lowers his shoulder, gets down close to the 5-yard line, and he is hit hard.
Oh, no.
He is down on the field. It's a gain of 6. He has a first down, but the concern now is about Tagovailoa, who has battled concussions for most of his career, and he took a licking.
This is absolutely the worst and last thing anybody wanted to see. We know Tua Tagovailoa's history with concussions, and that did not look good.
The reason it didn't look good, Westwood One, is because it's not good. And nobody wants to see it, and some of us don't want to be reminded of what we're watching and why we're watching it. And I've always admitted this, and it's taken me a long time to sort of figure out this position of hypocrisy. I'm a hypocrite when it comes to football.
We're all hypocrites. It's just the level of hypocrisy for everyone.
But it's a horrible, horrible, violent, brutal sport. And I love it. I love it. And I've said it's other people's children destroying their brains for my entertainment.
I mean, if you want to keep it a buck, that's what it is. Because it's a violent sport, and the violence, when you're at a game or even when you're on your couch and somebody gets their block knocked off
and we're like, oh,
did you see that hit? Yeah. Did you see that? Like, we do that the same way for a hit as we do a great catch, a great cut, a great block.
And even knowing that it's the subconcussive hits and the click, 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 click of the helmets, even knowing that that's adding up.
Because we tell ourselves, oh, that's what they signed up for. They knew the risk, which is not, in my older age, the most mature stance to take. Nope. when watching bad things happen.
I know it. I admit it. Hey, I grew up a boxing fan. I grew up a huge boxing fan.
I mean, this goes back to like the days of the gladiators, right?
We were talking about Justin Steele yesterday, right?
Yes.
And we were talking about there's nothing quite like that feeling when you're kind of connecting with an ancient pre-evolutionary part of your brain. You know, that is a... I know it. I know football's bad. But it still is hard for me to listen to players who, as informed as they are and as rich as they are, simply can't quit it. And this is when I kept thinking of this when Olin Krutz was talking with Matt Spiegel and David Haw about Tua Tagovailoa and what he knows about that family.
I do know Tua Tagovailoa. He's from my high school, right? He's from Honolulu, Hawaii. He's from St. Louis High School in Honolulu, Hawaii. I know his family. I know Tua well enough to know this. He's not walking away from the game, guys. He's not. So he is that kind of guy. He loves football. Is it a smart choice? That I don't know. I'm not in a room with the doctors, right? I'm not in a room with them. I know when you watch that, when you know what has happened to him, you do get worried, right? You do get worried for the young man. You do get worried for his family. You do get worried about life after football, right? Now being 47 years old, I have two sons who played Illinois. Obviously, health is an important thing that we talk about a lot. We all know the bargain that we're making with this game. We all know what we're getting out of this game, and we all know how dangerous this game is. So without all the information, it's hard to give a guy advice, right? And if I talk to Tua, I say collect the information, and you got to do what you feel like you and your family need to do. I know the dad. I know the dad pretty well. I know where they're from. I talked to them. They are not stepping away from this game, guys. Right? They're from where I'm from. They play football. We're a warrior culture in Hawaii. That's the way things are. You may like it. You may agree with it. You may not. That's up to you. Right? We don't force you to think certain things. We think a certain way. You do what you got to do. I will ask the players this, who are all saying that. I would ask Antonio Pierce this. Would you? Right? It's easy to say it. Right? I would ask all the former players on ESPN. I would ask when you stand in front of a microphone and you say the things that you think everybody wants to hear from you. And it's great. But I would ask Antonio Pierce this. Would you walk away from the game in your 20s? Would you do it? And I bet you the answer would be no. Right? And now we're talking about forcing a guy to do something he doesn't want to do. Right? Now you're going down a slippery slope. So I would say this, collect all the information you can, make the best decision for yourself. But if I had to bet on anything, I would bet you Tua's not going anywhere.
That is strong stuff from Olin Krutz, and he's so good. He's so good, and you can just tell that that's from a real place, and there's no equivocation in that. He knows what's going on. What the line that struck me is, he's from where I'm from. We are a warrior culture in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think that part and the part where he's saying NFL players, former players, would you give it up in your trip? We know the answer because we've heard some of them talk about it. You talk about being addicted to that, whether it's the adrenaline, this is what they know, can't imagine doing something else. Something that most athletes do face in their careers, no matter what they do, but specifically with football, because it is a different type of culture in the game itself. I'm not surprised at all that he believes Tua, unless a doctor says you can't play anymore, is going to come back and play. And that's maybe as much about the money as anything else, but, you know, he has money. He's not poor. He's made money. But the nine-figure contract that's on the table, and just the fact that he believes, because of how he was raised, that family, what they believe, how they look at the game of football. You can go back to like his college years and understand how that family looks at football. And I think all of that added up means Tua's going to come back. It's just a matter of if and when. One of the things Mike Florio talked about was oh, we saw him get that concussion, shut down for the season, Christmas Day, because it was the end of the season. Now that it's happened this early in the season, it's a different conversation, and it's not going to go away over the course of the offseason. Yes, we all have shorter attention spans than people did 20, 30 years ago, but we know what Tua is. We know what he represents.
It's just a matter of the level at which one glorifies it. And I think that Olin did.
We all glorify it, though. We're all guilty of that.
I think Olin did a nice job of being proud of his culture and supportive of his friend while also leaving room for us to have different opinions on what decision we would make. Because it's the one thing about football is, and talking about loves the game, and you talk about the culture of the sport separate from that, what he's talking about, the warrior culture of Hawaii and the Maori and wherever that ancient history may be. But it's a matter of the extent of the glorification of it. And that's what I think high schools are learning about and doing better at, is not getting too caught up in some of the mythos. The mythos.
I don't think the mythos is going anywhere of
the game. And this, you know,
I think parents are getting more involved in understanding how dangerous this sport is compared to all the other sports. Like a lot of sports you play, oh, you may tear an ACL or break a bone, but that's all healable. When you're talking about someone's brain, that's different. That's different. That's on the same level of you found out your child has a heart condition because they collapsed on the court or the field or whatever. The brain and heart are different than all these other things we talk about.
And believe it or not, a heart can be repaired.
Yes.
You can get in there and do surgery, and you can pop a new valve in there. There's all kinds of things they can do. They can do electrical ablations for arrhythmia. They can put stents in. A heart is a machine, and you can do all that. You can't do that with a brain.
847 on the text line. By the time a player reaches the NFL, he has had a decade of subconcussive collisions. Why do you think he can make an informed decision after that?
Well, then we're getting into some of the science of the people who are susceptible to some of the early deterioration and the people who are not and what that means. So I don't know that I know enough. I just know, have you ever been to a press conference or any time where a player has retired due to concussions?
I've not.
I have. And I've to see the look in their eye and the fear, the enormity.
Well, if it's enough that they have to retire, that means the cart has gone past the horse and is rolling out of control, and a bunch of people are trying to chase it down, throw things at it to slow it down.
It's really one of the most sobering moments, and it's not all of this hullabaloo of "Hey, I'm retiring." It's the doctor said I have to retire right now.
It reminds me of when, I mean, I don't know what year Any Given Sunday came out, but like the whole thing with the Lawrence Taylor's character and like wanting to play, and just they finally let him play. I'm like, yeah, this is a little too close to home.
This segment is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. High Noon is next. If you have been thinking you might have been seeing an old favorite candy bar, you're right, because it's back.
I can't wait to find out what candy bar this is.
You might be a little too young. Just a little too young.
We'll find out together.
It's next.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
It's midweek high noon. That means this is the middle of your work week. This means you are over the hump on hump day. It's the middle of our show. Well, not really today, it's a short show. But then you're sliding on in. We talked to Mike Florio. We also had some conversations about a timetable on Keenan Allen, hoping that they'll just say, hey, here's what the injury is. Here's how bad it is. Here's when we can expect him to be back and playing. We heard Donovan McNabb's thoughts on providing a little bit of patience for Caleb Williams. Olin on Tua Tagovailoa was excellent as well.
It's time.
So I don't think you're going to remember the candy bar. I was a huge, huge fan of the Reggie bar. Named after Reggie Jackson.
Mr. October.
It was an unmistakable bright orange wrapper. Came out in the late 1970s. I believe in 78, you could get it for a quarter. And I loved it. And it wasn't just because I was a huge Reggie Jackson fan, because Reggie was awesome. That was part of it. It was a legitimately good candy bar. It was really soft, stringy, gooey caramel covered in chocolate and roasted peanuts. And usually the first bite, if you pulled your teeth away, it was like the commercial. The caramel would string out.
Super sticky.
Yes.
And it kind of had that cluster.
Yeah,
it's going to take you a minute to get through the first bite.
And the whole thing. It was an experience.
Which is good because candy bars go too quick when you just eat them like in three bites and it's over.
That one doesn't let you do it. The Reggie bar's back. The Reggie bar is back.
How?
Well, this is an incredible story. Chris Nishwadi of Fast Company, who's a wonderful writer, decided to research because he saw it in like a bodega in New York. He's like, wait, what? What? And he mentions that, he was in California. Yeah, and he said, I was drawn to it like a mosquito to a bug zapper. I put down the case of bottled water my wife had sent me to pick up. And began racing through some quick math. $20 divided by $2.99 equals 6. I had enough for 6 Reggie bars. I walked out of the store feeling like a kid again. This, of course, is not how grown men should act. But here I was, like Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk, blowing the last of his family's savings on some magic beans, except in this case, the magic beans were delicious discs of chocolate, caramel, and roasted peanuts endorsed by a power-hitting New York Yankees legend. So what did he do? He was so inspired, he tracked down the story. So it's a history of the copyrights, the ownership. It's a small Canadian company. It was just a Canadian husband and wife who had been researching defunct candies
trying to bring something back.
Buying it up on the cheap.
I believe that.
It was like $200. But then all they needed to produce it again was Reggie Jackson's permission. So they had to go to Reggie Jackson and say, is it okay? And the writer got in touch with Reggie, and he said, the voice of the 78-year-old Hall of Famer is clear and familiar. He said, as I speak, I've caught him in his garage photographing his 1966 Mercedes 300 SE AMG,
ooh,
valued at nearly $1.5 million in one of the numerous vehicles he owns.
I love that.
He's shooting photos to send to a potential buyer. Yeah, the first thing he wants to know from me is how much I paid for my Reggie bar. I tell him. He thinks this over. And he said, what did you think? Did it taste like you remembered? It's modeled after the Wayne Bun bar, first produced in 1947 by the Wayne Bun Candy Company in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And if you remember, it was born out of a boast.
Don't remember that.
When Reggie left the Orioles, he told the media if he ever got a chance to play in New York City, he'd become such a massive star they'd name a candy bar after him.
And they did.
After they won the World Series, it was originally the Curtis Candy Company. They were makers of the Baby Ruth. They pitched to Hershey's and Mars. Both of the big guys turned it down. So Curtis, which was part of Standard Brands, which are now both subsumed by Nabisco. And famously, remember what Catfish Hunter said? That he said, Catfish Hunter said, when you unwrap a Reggie bar, it tells you how good it is.
That tracks.
And the Reggie bar earned $11 million in the New York area alone in 1978. The candy was briefly resurrected in 1993, but they replaced the Caramel Center with peanut butter. But then that company went bankrupt. But this couple in Canada, the Crystal and Burt Westergaard in Camrose, Alberta, had an experience of buying up a defunct candy in Canada called the Cuban Lunch.
Never heard of that.
I've never heard of it either.
I don't know what translates from Canadian to American, but
it was called Cuban Lunch was the name of it. So they had success doing it, and then they started looking for other brands, and they ran into the Reggie bar, and they got Reggie's permission. He said, send me a business proposal, and he signed off. And they give him a percentage of every bar sold, and some of the proceeds of the Reggie bar go to Reggie Jackson's charity,
which
focuses on STEM education for underserved kids.
Ooh, that's a great story.
Yep.
And it's a great unearthed story, not only by the journalist who, of course, found the Reggie bar at the bodega, but just to go get the story and to find out how it came back, how Reggie and the couple came to an agreement, and sounds like it's beneficial to everyone, especially the consumer in this case.
And apparently they really were careful about how it works and what they had. That wrapper had to be bright orange again. And so they went to a company to do the prototypes because Reggie had to taste it. Reggie wasn't going to sign off until he tried it. So the only thing that Reggie added was he said more peanuts.
Mm.
So I'm down with that. And then they said that the caramel needed to be less brown and more honey-colored like it was in the commercials that they watch on YouTube.
Wow.
Said it had to have the amber appearance, and it had to have that gooey runniness. It may not seem like a big deal, but people care.
Yeah, because this is, as most things are in 2024, with the target audience of 25 to 54, even older than that, nostalgia is more powerful than I ever could have imagined as a child. It really is. And I think this Reggie Bar story is an example of that. But also, there's examples of nostalgia just taking money to the bank every day if you just pay attention to everything that's going on around you.
Got a little Bears news from Brad Biggs. He says, Keenan Allen will not practice today.
Oh, man.
Tevin Jenkins with a deep thigh bruise will not practice today. Kari Blasingame and Zach Pickens will not practice today. Now, that wasn't the question. The question on Keenan Allen is what's the timetable? You've been asking. We still don't know. You know what we do know? We're going to talk some quarterbacking. Sexy football coming up next. We are going to get to the bottom of the struggles of Caleb Williams with Tim Jenkins, our quarterback coach. our private quarterback coach. He's next on The Score.
Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad. And I tried to handle it gently. The first thing in his bio was he was born in 1952. And if my grandpappy's on Twitter roasting somebody, I hope they handle him gently. And I tried to.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
These are the kind of decisions we just can't make as an NFL quarterback.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
I want you guys to watch Caleb Williams. He's going to go ahead and he's going to step up here. He's going to scramble out of the pocket, and we are just going to turn and chuck this thing all the way across the field. We just can't do that. They get bailed out by a defensive holding, but those are the kind of decisions we just can't make.
On 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
How about it? Tim Jenkins is on Twitter at TJenkinsElite, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. He is with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. I hope you're already following him and checking out the video breakdowns that he does that are just football porn and understanding what through his eyes what is happening in a game and what quarterbacks are seeing. You can see him now, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
I'm good. How's Caleb Williams doing in your eyes?
It's nothing you guys don't know. It's such a hard question right now because of the protection issues, right? Like the audio of the clip that you guys played on the intro, it's like a perfect example of being a rookie quarterback where he's going to climb the pocket and, hey, he basically turns and burns to a one-on-one, which, like, on the surface isn't a terrible decision, right? A one-on-one matchup. It's just when you kind of, like, no-look it, and then it ends up in an interception. Now they get bailed out by the D holding. So those are, like, plays where on the surface you go, oh, horrible, right? When you take it in the context of the game where it's, like, we have simple twists. When we're talking about twists, like, think – you know, the defensive tackle and the defensive end, the end goes first. He tries to take two of our guys and the tackle wraps around. Like when simple twists are getting home, it's then hard to really come down critically on his decision-making. Cause it's like, dude, you've been on the move the whole game. You're getting absolutely killed back there. And oh, by the way, like you're fearing for your safety, but I need you to be smarter with the football. It's always just like a dynamic conversation that you have to have with these quarterbacks. And right now, if Chicago can't protect, it's really hard to truly say, hey, man, I think he's struggling with all this decision-making, because if you're sitting back there and you're just getting teed off on, like, no one on planet Earth makes good decisions, no matter who you are.
How do you take that and pair it with the fact that this is a rookie quarterback who now has exactly two games of NFL experience and expect him to begin to grow? I mean, what can you take away from a performance like that when you literally are running for your life?
Yeah, there's not a lot you can take away from it other than he's way more athletic than me. There's a couple of plays that I saw him get out of the pocket, and I'm like, man, I'd have tripped over the DN. I did that a bunch in college. So to me, I'm like, you know, I think his movement, we've got to be satisfied with. I do think there were enough concepts that we saw, man, when he plays on rhythm, how good he can be and how good this offense can be. I think we sometimes underrate just how good of a scripted series they had to come out, right? I think they moved the ball pretty effectively. If you think about that third and long, it's like, you know, they have that scheme where, hey, they run the ultra high, that super high corner from the slot receiver. Then we've got the speed out. We hit that on the sideline. We had DJ Moore working the slot on a little slant route that he hits. Like, their scripted series was great. And then there was a series in the middle of the game that I really want to talk about. It was drive number 5. It was a 3-and-out, which on the surface, everyone be like, well, that's horrible. With the exception of it was like formationally, they got so creative and it was really nice to see. It was the one where, you know, they open up and they line up basically three guys in the backfield. He's in gun. He has three guys also in the backfield with him. And it's like he gets the commit, they get 5 yards, and then they start in quads, you know, four receivers to a side, which is a very untraditional set, motion the back in. Because of that, there's a little defensive communication breakdown, and they pop that corner route. That's the one that he misses that, to me, was probably the only really bad throw of the day he had from the true, like, hey, we've got a guy open, we have to hit this. We then didn't see any other, like, super exciting formation thing. So to me, it was like drive number 5 is kind of where it's, you know, if you could talk about if it was my offense to run.
I was just going to ask that.
How would you figure it out?
Yeah. Yeah, if it was my offense to run, it's like we're going in the meeting room. The first thing we're addressing is protections, right? And it's not even true. You're gonna get beat one-on-one in the NFL, right? If every offensive lineman never got beat in the NFL, we would pay defensive linemen $500,000. Instead, we're paying them millions of dollars as well, right? So it's like we're gonna get beat every once in a while on a one-on-one. Where we can't get beat is like a simple, you know, hey, we need to bump. We need to communicate better on these twists. And then the protection issues where it's like we had guys running free and, hey, is he supposed to be a hot? Caleb, are you supposed to manipulate the mic? Those are the number one thing. Boom, we have to address it. The second thing I'm doing, though, is we're getting super creative formationally because what Chicago is doing, like every team that has a rookie quarterback, they're reloading a bunch of concepts, meaning they have their third and long. They only have four instead of the traditional nine, right, that you carry into a game. They have four, and they're dressing it up formationally. But to me, it's like going from 2x2 with a simple motion to 3x1, that's not enough, right? It's not enough of a dress-up to fool an NFL defense. We need to get real exotic with our formation. So to me, it's like formation creativity would be my second priority. Hey, let's get super creative with these formations. We'll keep the concepts the same so our receivers know what to do. That's a new unit, right? Our quarterback knows what to do, but we're going to dress it up. We're going to, hey, here are the 12 formations you're going to learn, which is way easier to learn than a new play concept. And then we're just going to dress it up formationally. And I think there's a lot that you can gain from that. And then I also think we need just growth from I don't want to say creativity in the pass and run game, but we need growth in the kill game. Cause we saw Caleb out there. He was killing, alerting. We need more growth in, hey, get us in and out of the right run play based on the look, right? They give us two high, let's run it. They give us single high, let's throw it. That's where I'd like to see more growth and then put more on him because it looked like Caleb could handle it from what I saw on tape and then what the Sunday night broadcast kind of was showing, you know, audio-wise.
Well, that's going to mean a lot of running then, Tim, because which is fine for this week against the Colts, but really the trend around the league right now everywhere is at least showing too deep. You may end up in quarters, you may end up in two-man, or it might be exactly the Tampa 2 that they're showing. But putting a lid on the defense now with some of the quality of these athletes is suppressing all the passing numbers. But the Bears haven't run it well. What part of not having a running game hurts him? Is it not being able to use play action off of it, or is it down in distance facing 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 instead of 3rd and 2?
That's such a great question. This is such a great point, right? We're seeing too high at a huge rate, which is impacting all these passing numbers, like you're saying. I think what hurts him the most is the fact that we don't force any single high, right? To me, the way you beat this too high coverage is you kind of like put your pride aside and you turn on some San Fran and you turn on some Miami Dolphins and it's like the Dolphins in prime time, like completely dump the bed so nobody wants to watch them. But go back to their Week 1 and see what they did motion wise, because to me it's like two shell from an integrity standpoint is actually somewhat tough to run on too if you're stagnant or if we're in a traditional set. If we're gonna, hey, line up in, let's say we're gonna get into 21 personnel, but then we're gonna show you 2x2, right? So meaning, hey, we got two backs, one tight end, so we're a little heavier, you're gonna have to go base, but instead of lining up in a traditional 21 formation, hey, guess what? Let's go ahead and bump Cole Kmet outside, he's now a stand-up guy, and let's go ahead and put our like hybrid, you know, F, who's like a hybrid fullback tight end, we'll put him in the wing formation. And then guess what? Okay, we're going to shift and we're going to get into flank. So we're going to bump Kmet in. We're going to get our F over there. And then we're going to run a 4-man surface run at you. And everything that you do when you do something like that is you go, okay, it's not about our standpoint. Our standpoint is shift. We're going to get to a 4-man surface. We're going to run it at you. What's hard from a defensive standpoint is think about if we get into 21, we force you into base. So now I'm a big old Sam linebacker. And I'm thinking, all right, man, I'm going to go pound run. Oh, guess what? Cole Kmet's standing up. So now I'm thinking, what's my pass assignment? I walk out there and then boom, they shift to now we're in a 4-man surface. So now I'm yelling, hey, hey, bump, bump. I got to go walk up on the line of scrimmage. And before I know it, I'm getting whammed, right? And then we're running it at. Those are the kind of things that to me, you see San Fran do it. You see some of these heavy shift teams. You see Minnesota do it. It's a creative way to get to attack with the run game, these two high defenses. And then guess what? All of a sudden, to me, it's like amazing to me. Every time I turn on Miami, I turn on San Fran, I turn on Minnesota, these teams with explosive playmakers, right? someone you think traditionally you'd never want to be in single high coverage against. They're getting single high coverage because you only have so many checks as a defense at your disposal to account for, you know, the kind, the ways that they change strength on the line of scrimmage, the ways they motion. So to me, that's how we get creative. We got to, I think, get heavier in our personnel, but use that heavy personnel in a spread set to begin with. Every once in a while, quick snap them, we'll throw a quick game and then spread them out. And then boom, we're going to shift. We're going to get into a heavy set. We're going to run right at you. And we're going to make your linebackers talk to each other and go from, hey, I'm standing up in coverage to, hey, I'm the point guy on the line of scrimmage. That to me is how you attack the two high if they're going to give it to you. And then in hopes that eventually they give us single high coverage.
But that takes patience.
That
takes a lot of patience, and offensive coordinators aren't patient.
I was just going to ask from a variance perspective, how long is the install on when you talk about creativity in the formations to get that all, everyone on the same page? Can that be done in a week? Can that be done in 3 days? Like, how much time does that take, Tim?
Yeah, I think transparently the formations is a heck of a lot quicker than the concepts, right? Because when you're teaching concepts, you're teaching not only like, hey, man, when we run Flutie, our number one receiver has the post, number two has the sail, but it's like, oh, and then by the way, if we're into the boundary, we want you to inside easiest release on your sail route, unless we see this coverage, then we want you to outside release. And then, oh, by the way, if they bring Q Deuce off your face, you're hot. Like, to me, that's so much harder than rather than saying, hey, you know, we already know the Flutie concepts or whatever they call it, right, that they installed during training camp. But guess what? We're going to start in double right, and we're going to F right into trips right, right? Like those to me, hey, we already have these formations in. We're just getting to them in a different way. Heck of a lot easier. You know, I would cite the 2024 Wildcats, Mac Jenkins' second grade flag team, as the example of that, because we only run two concepts, but hell, boys, we dress them up in 30 different formations. These poor second graders on defense, they're not running with any of our guys.
When you say Flutie concept, is that the Chip Kelly stuff?
Flutie, we had it when I was in St. Louis. It's post-sale. That's a great question because I asked that. Okay, I'm a dumb rookie. I signed as an undrafted free agent. We've got the number one overall pick, Sam Bradford, in the room. So they're not slowing down for me at all. So I'm studying, and everybody knows I had to drop out of Fort Lewis College, which you just need a heartbeat to get into because I'm not that smart. So I ask, I say, hey, why do we call it Flutie? And Schottenheimer's answer was Doug liked it, meaning Doug Flutie. So I don't have a good answer. All right, answer why.
Okay.
The answer
is Doug football.
Flutie liked it, and that's what it is.
The answer is football. Also, what is when you say surface run, when you say four-man what's the definition of surface in that regard?
So, like, think of it as when we just have our center guards tackles, each side is a two-man surface. Then, hey, you bring an attached tight end. Now we've got a three-man surface.
Okay.
And then when I say flank, what I mean is we would have that tight end, our Y, and then our F is outside of him in a wing, which creates that four-man surface. It's a four-man side. To me, it's like a lot of the zone running game or any of the running game we're seeing in the National Football League, a lot of it's based on one tight end. Hey, we're going to have a, you know, outside zone to the three-man surface side, kill the inside zone on the two-man, and they base that on the front. If it's an over front, they kill it to the backside run. If it's an under front, meaning the three tech is weak, they keep it on the strong side run. So that's just when we say three-man, four-man surface.
Got it.
Guys to that.
It's just the numbers. So that way, if I'm following, if they're in too deep, they can't, if you keep running that way off of that basis, at some point, the math itself dictates that they have to bring a safety into the box just because otherwise you're going to have.
It's too heavy.
Everybody's blocked and you've got an extra guy.
Bingo. And the only other way to problem solve it from a defensive standpoint is to really super bump your linebackers, meaning, hey, your Sam linebacker walks up to the four-man. Your Mike almost gets all the way over. Let's say it's the right side is our four side. Your Mike gets all the way over to almost the right tackle. Your Will then kind of is playing right over the center. And then guess what? You got DJ Moore backside for a slant, right? Like that's, you know, when you see those runs where it's like the quarterback kind of shows his shoulders and then he gets backside and throws it. It's like a run adjust off a four-man is huge because if you get that bump where they still want to play too high behind it, you can gash him in quick game. Usually what you see, though, is you see that strong safety walk up just because he has to. Free safety kicks to the middle. You kind of force him into some more single high coverages. With that being said, I'd be foolish to not mention, hey, it's harder to, you're limited from a pass concept standpoint, again, because you're heavier personnel-wise. And, you know, traditionally, we would want some of our receivers running those deep over type things. However, you can dress it up. You know, imagine if you have the single back, the two guys in the wing, your Z's all the way outside, you know, that being Keenan Allen or that being Rome, right? Mm-hmm. And we go ahead and we motion him down, and then now we can run him on the deep over opposite with DJ Moore on the takeoff. There's some exotic things you can do out of it. And I think it's an easy add for him. And honestly, I think personnel-wise, you know, they like the 14 kid at tight end. I think more than they like Komet from a play standpoint. Let's get them both in the ball game, right? We got two guys that they obviously feel good about. Get them both in there, and then let's go ahead and see if we can gash them in the run game and then also hit them with the play action.
And this is the week to do it. Tim Jenkins. Oh, need a cigarette after that. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, fellas.
And I don't even smoke.
But the way he just rolls the explanation and explains it, it makes sense, one. But two, it gives hope. It gives hope that things can be solved. They have problems, but the problems are solvable. Perhaps.
Maybe the Bears don't see it the way he sees it. It's possible that they're just going to keep pounding away and work on their fundamentals and say, this system works. And
pounding their head against the wall? Is that what you're saying? Say pound away?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that as much.
It's happened a lot here with Bears offenses. Caleb Williams has met the media. He had a lot to say. You'll hear it next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes.
I hate being a fan of this team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, Marshall Harris filling in, along with Dan Bernstein, having a good time, but, you know, good times don't last too long because eventually somebody from Hallis Hall has to step to the mic.
Hey, it's okay. Things aren't so, they're 1-1.
That's the point. I said they would be 1-1 last week, but all of a sudden the 1-1 apparently isn't to the liking of all these people who are consuming Bears football.
Well, here's what Caleb Williams had to say on the podium at the lectern.
How are you feeling physically? I know you said the other day you were a little bruised up from the sacks. How is your body today?
Yeah, I'm a little bruised up still. But body-wise, movement, all of that, feel good. Throwing and running around. We just had a walkthrough and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of get a test of, you know, the treatment and all of that that I've gotten over the past couple of days. But, yeah, no, feel good.
Caleb, where did you feel like you made positive steps or improvements in Sunday from week one to week two?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is the communication in and out of the huddle. We were actually pretty good with that, especially going to a stadium like that. Obviously, their fans were excited. Their first home game, I believe, and you know, they were out there rowdy and things like that. And communication wise and the huddle and all of that, I believe we did a good job. And then I would say the pass game rhythm and things like that felt good. Obviously, I had the two stupid mistakes that won't happen again. But I think rhythm, pass game, getting the ball to receivers. I think I got better with getting the ball out of my hands. It felt like, trying to stay in the right range of timing for the offensive lineman myself, and the routes and things like that. So I think those are the few spots that I've gotten better at.
As this offense continues to evolve and you've been in it for a while, what do you sense that you guys should be able to do really well soon?
Yeah, I think really, really well. I think one of the things we'll be able to do really well soon is I think we'll be able to run the ball. I'm trying to figure out exactly what runs fit best with, our personnel, the people we have. I think that's the thing that's going to emerge here really soon, and having confidence and keeping steadfast with that, with running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, everybody, having confidence that, we're going to break through and figure out exactly what our personality is of the run. And then other than that, I think that's probably the one that I think is going to come faster than others.
Caleb, how much of an adjustment is the pressure in the pocket for you compared to what you dealt with in college and even what you dealt with in training camp, where there's some restrictions on how real that pressure can actually be in practice?
Yeah, the difference. I think the guys are just, you know, either a little bit older and things like that, and not meaning that as in like they're, you know, they're old and slow and things like that. They're older. They've been practicing these pass rush moves, all these different things for years now, over and over. You know, they got guys, you know, like we just played, and they got good guys on the edge that are, you know, really good. And then they got the vet guy, and then they got the young guy, and they collaborate. They do well when they're in the field together and things like that. So I think just getting used to getting hit again. It's been a while. It's been since November 18th, since the last time I got hit. So just getting used to that, like really hit. And so, you know, getting used to that, getting used to, you know, having, you know, some games like that. It's the NFL. There's going to be games like that throughout the year, throughout the years. And so making sure, you know, I take care of what I need to take care of throughout the, you know, the years, the weeks and things like that to make sure that we can keep going and I'm able to go out there and prepare and play well.
To that end, are there things that you've learned through two games that you might have been successful with in college that you can't get away with in the NFL?
No. Play your game. Play within the, you know, the way that we need to play, the way that I need to play for the offense. You know, be efficient and, you know, make less mistakes each week. Don't make the same mistake over and over.
Caleb was talking about communication problems along the offensive line that may have contributed. What specifically does that mean? Are you involved in that? Like, can you explain?
Yes, I'm always involved in communication issues because it starts with me in the center first. And then throughout the game a few times, the clock got kind of low. And I was on a different cadence. Not on a different cadence than the offensive line, but I was on a cadence that I didn't want or shouldn't have used, you know, when the clock being that low. And obviously, you know, you get the call in the huddle, you're in the huddle for however long, and then you get up there and you're like, you already called your cadence. And so trying to change the cadence at the line instead of using, you know, some of our tools that we have, I think that comes with, you know, time. I think that comes with obviously more communication, you know, for myself. And using the tools that I have to be able to get the ball off, even if I'm on a, you know, a cadence that may you know, be a little bit longer.
Caleb, I was looking at stats from your Heisman season,
mm-hmm.
and you guys ran the ball really well.
Mm-hmm.
At USC, what is the benefit that you learned then of having a robust run game, and how it makes your life easier?
Yeah, I think everybody knows that, you know, you've been able to run the ball well as a team and do it effectively. Doesn't mean you have to run it 30 times. You can run it 15 and, you know, amount to the same thing and be just as effective. So, you know, I think, like I said, everybody knows that having an effective run game just helps everything, and having an effective pass game helps the run game. So I think it's us playing together, you know, the way that we should. When it's a pass, you know, we're all detailed, dialed in. You know, routes are breaking off at how many ever steps, how many ever yards, we're holding up. I'm getting through my reads and things like that, not holding on reads, you know, making adjustments with lines and things like that. And then, you know, in the pass game for offensive line, you know, head across hands or wherever hand placement needs to be, the track and, you know, the track between me and the back, you know, my play fake and things like that, to make sure I'm trying to at least pull one or two people, to open things up, you know. Backside wins championships, front side wins games and things like that. So I think it's us just, you know, Coach Flus talked about it. It's about the fundamentals and handling it the way we should.
Caleb, after you watched the tape, given how much we saw you get pressured this past week, what did you learn and how can you really better attack that pressure moving forward? Because Indy this week, obviously, they pressure a ton too.
Yep. I think one, communication. Two is making just faster adjustments throughout the game, having better communication between myself, coaches, and offensive line and things like that, making sure we're on the same page and making the adjustments we need to, you know, in game. Obviously, you have adjustments and things like that that you practice throughout the week, but, you know, the other team's job is to try and confuse you, throw different things at you, different looks, and so being able to, you know, adjust quickly in game, I think, is the most important thing, and starts with communication.
In the fourth quarter,
Yeah, I know. I know they just Foster, I believe his name is. He just was placed on IR, but I mean they're D-line. They're pretty good. Their backers are aggressive. You know, they've been awesome. You know, and they're back seven. They play well together so far. I know that obviously, you know, they've these past two games they've had about 200 yards on them rushing. And so I know they're gonna, you know, try and, you know, make that a key for them to make sure you stop the run. Because just like anybody, you stop the run, you kind of you know, make the team one dimensional. So, you know, we'll see what their plan is when we get out there. But I think it's a great opponent, and you know, we're excited for it.
In the fourth quarter Sunday, you had a downfield shot to DJ where you tried to go back shoulder.
Yep.
When you guys went back and discussed that sequence, what's the back and forth there about getting that ironed out?
Yeah, it's just, you know, we're trying to get on the same page. That's what it comes down to, because we want to complete those. Those are, you know, they're, I mean, obviously it's not a layup, but it's one of those. The corner's playing over top. You know, DJ ran a slant, took it upfield on a slant and go, and you know, the DB kind of bit for a quick second, and then tried to retrace and got over top. And I wanted to just get the ball in DJ's hand, get him the ball. Obviously, you know, he does spectacular things with the ball in his hand. So tried to give him the ball, and we just, I mean, if I threw it a little bit, you know, a little less wide and gave him a little bit more time, he would have made the play. And so we'll be hitting on those here soon. We're going to be, you know, making those plays.
And you mentioned games like that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But what's it been like to live it and the reality of the challenge that comes with playing the position and going through it an entire season?
Yeah, it's great. It's truly awesome. I mean, you sign up for this position, you sign up for games like that. That was a playoff, you know, team last year. And to be down six with a chance to go win with the ball in your hands, it's all you can ask for. Obviously, defense played great. Special teams did well. You know, offense, we got a touchdown in there. We're going to need more, obviously. You know, it felt great to be in the game, be in that, you know, that type of game, that type of environment. I'm excited for more. I know the team's excited for more. You know, getting back here, getting back with the guys, couldn't be more excited.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thank you. The Bears.
That's Caleb Williams. He is taking all of this in stride, and I don't think we should be surprised knowing that young man's makeup. Callers 6 and 7 to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670, will win a pair of tickets to Mully and Hawes' September 25th broadcast from 5:30 to 10 a.m. at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Mully and Haw are going to be joined by Bulls head coach Billy Donovan and his boss, Arturis Karnišovas, in studio during the 8 a.m. hour that morning. All brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. Real quick, what did you find of note that you heard from Caleb?
I thought it was interesting when he talked about the run game. He was like, you don't have to run it 30 times. You can just run it good 15 times. Yeah, Caleb Williams wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be back there making things happen. I liked, and I'm not surprised by how composed he sound in terms of understanding where they are and what they need to do.
And what I liked is he didn't kind of take the bait, and I'm not saying it was the question was posed wrongly, but the question was something like, what are you learning about what you could do and get away with in college that you can't in the pros? His response was, that's really not an issue. You just got to let it rip.
I'm going to play my game. That's what I heard.
So it was I'm going to play my game?
Yeah.
Well, I like that because he didn't acknowledge that that was even true.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He understands where he is. He understands that they have not run the football and that they need an identity, and talked about the personnel around him, like making sure we have the right groupings. But he said that's going to be the next thing to go is the run game.
Thanks to Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, Cody Westerland as well. Marshall, thanks to you once again for being in today. We thank Tim Jenkins and Mike Florio for joining us. Man, do we have a show tomorrow. Write this down. Our show tomorrow, Jason Stacked. Leisure at 11, Charch 11:25, Matt Bowen at noon, Jarrett Payton makes his first appearance with us at 12:25, and then at 1:25, ahead of Riot Fest, Blothar the Berserker, lead singer of GWAR.
I wish I could say I was familiar, but I'll find out before tomorrow.
Blothar the Berserker will be on the show tomorrow. Cubs baseball is coming up.
We got to go, guys. It is Cubs baseball. People are excited. We're here. We're all Cubs fans. We know what we're rooting for. Wrap it up. How do you end this?
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good to see you.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.